passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Another day. Good afternoon. Welcome in. It is Tuesday, and what a day it's already been. We are just getting started here on our program. We hope you'll snuggle up to that television or turn off the radio if you're in the car. We have a lot to do, and let's get started right now. $146 million in buyouts owed to fired Power 5 coaches since 22. And you could correctly guess who got the lion's share of that. That would be Mr. Jumbo Fisher. Speaking of vacancies, Dan Lanning says there is zero chance of leaving the Ducks. Well, I remember in 2006, Nick Saban saying the same thing about leaving the Dolphins. And wrestling legend Ric Flair calls out Paul Feinbaum over outrageous Michigan criticism. Remember, this is the same Ric Flair who once ruled the world of wrestling and then became a big Georgia fan. He tried to shake hands with Kirby Smart a couple years ago, and Kirby blew him off, and he decided to go crazy, and now is a Michigan fan. And they're trying to get him out of retirement to meet me in a cage match, but I really don't like picking on old men like that. Welcome back to the program. I did not have getting called out by the Nature Boy in on my bingo card when I woke up this morning. But welcome to the program. We are off and running, and let's share with you who will be joining us. Terry and Arnold, you do not want to miss this conversation with the DB from the Crimson Tide, who has been fantastic. He will have a lot to say about how Alabama made it to the SEC championship game. Stefan Krasniak, remember we talked to him in Starkville many months ago when all was good. He'll talk about where that program is right now. David Bellinson, he's the director of SEC Story. That will be on tonight. And Paula Levine, who did the deep dive for ESPN on where this dead money is going. Let's get to your phone calls at 855-242-7285 and begin with Harry in New Orleans. Harry, how are you?
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
And I just want to be brief. I'm going to, if you don't mind, give you a little update about some interesting props.
Sure.
That I discovered this morning through a friend of mine out west. Regarding the A&M job, a couple of the emporiums had Urban Meyer 20-1, and the gentleman at the University of University of whatever San Antonio was at 12-1, but I thought 20-1 was quite interesting on Urban Meyer. I thought he might have been a little lower than that, but be that as it may. And the other question I had for you, Paul, was. You know, now that I'm limited to listening instead of viewing, does Alabama look as good as they sound?
Yes, they do.
Well, I thought you would say that.
it's really a dramatic turnaround. Jalen Milroe looks like a Heisman candidate from a guy that lost his job 2 weeks into it. But what really gets you is the offensive line has worked through a lot of its deficiencies from early on, but the defense is just suffocating. I was with the crew that I hang out with on Saturday morning, and they said last week, the three of them, two quarterbacks and a DB, they thought the Alabama defense was better than Georgia.
Well, the only other thing I can share with you, Paul, about out west, I had to partake in a little bit of this myself. They had a what they call an outlaw line on the Alabama-Georgia game. If it comes to fruition, I had to grab that Alabama +4. Not for a lot, but just enough to keep me interested while I listen.
Well, I think you made a good decision because I believe the game opened yesterday at 3 or 3.5. And
yeah, and I think some bulldog takers, you know, cause it to go up a smidgen. And I said, well, if not now, when? It'll be something to look forward to. I sure hope the game goes off as, you know, as we all hope it will. But anyway, Paul, thank you. And some advice to my good friend.
By the way, Harry, the game is set. Regardless of what happens, that game will be played in Atlanta. Well, you keep calling, and it's always a pleasure to hear from you. Let's check in with John in Louisville. Hey, John.
Hey, hello. And I think that $146 million that was mentioned in the article, which is a great article, by the way, I think it'll double when you add Pat Fitzgerald's wrongful termination and all the assistant coaches. That's ridiculous money. Thank you, Woodward. Thank you, Bjork. That's just crazy stuff. But did I miss Legend's five hot takes yesterday, or is he?
There was no Legend to be found.
Well, he needs to remember his roots. I know he's in a big-time league now, but we look forward to that Monday. Hey, Paul, you were reminiscing about baseball on the radio versus talking over the game on TV. And I'm about your age, and we would travel in the summer, and we would hear, you know, like Bob Prince, Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Jack Buck and Harry Carey. Bob Campbell and Philly, but the one I remember the best, because they had a radio tower that just stretched over so many states, a guy called Ernie Harwell.
Detroit.
And they all have their favorite sayings, but he would say things like, you know, on a called third strike, he just stood there like the house on the side of the road, and it's a long fly ball, it's out of here. And when the foul ball was up in the stands, he'd make up a city and say, you know, like a man from Grand Rapids caught the ball. But also Ronald Reagan, did he not do broadcast but off a wire tape?
Yeah, I think he did it for the Cubs. Now, back in the day, and I'm talking about way back, the broadcasters weren't always at the game. They may have been in studio with a ticker tape that would come in and give them the inning. You would get the entire innings, and then you would describe them.
Read off them. So, right. Real quick,
maybe
my prediction
the road games,
and
that's
the
how
see
they
if.
Did it.
Yeah, here's my predictions, and this is hard to believe, but I think you've been steering this direction. Washington is a 2.5. Actually, Oregon State's a 2.5 plus favorite over Washington. I know Washington's the USC 2.0 in defense, but I'm looking for Washington upset there. I'm looking for Georgia 3-touchdown favorite. I know it's only 10.5 right now. Still think Michigan will sign Harbaugh. And for the CFP, Georgia, Ohio State, and Michigan, that's interchangeable. Actually, I think Michigan's leading in both the FPI and the SP+. And then FSU only because they have an easy schedule. They're in, as far as I'm concerned. And then I think the rest of it mirrors the AP poll, don't you?
I do. Hey, thank you very, very much. Appreciate that, John. Let's check in with Jay, who is up next. Hey, Jay.
Roll Tide, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Man, it's getting harder and harder to get through, Paul, but I keep persisting to get in there. Anyway, another great Saturday of football. Well, Paul, the stage is set for the SEC championship. I want to shout out to Daryl and all you obnoxious Bulldog fans. We're coming to get our SEC trophy back. Put it back where it belongs. Anyway, Paul, enough about that. I want to know your personal opinion. We all knew it was coming about Dumbo Fisher, but in your personal opinion, do you think maybe A&M would go after Drinkwitz or Kiffin? And we all know they got deep pockets, but I want to know your personal opinion on that, Paul.
Well, Jay, I think Kiffin could factor into the mix. I don't really know where they're going, but I think A&M is a unique job. You just can't grab a guy and force him into that that hole there. You have to get somebody that understands that culture, that understands what it means, and is also a phenomenal coach and recruiter. And Kiffin checks those boxes. Thank you very, very much. Bash is up next in Colorado.
Yep. Paul Feinbaum, how we doing?
Ash?
So yesterday I just want to say that my my Coach Moore impression was as pathetic as Dwayne from Louisiana's roar 2 weeks ago. Almost also as pathetic as Stacy from Birmingham's little Ghostbuster jingle he sang last week. But on that subject, Paul, I just want to clarify and just ask one thing. I know you've said numerous times on this show throughout the years existed that the way you pronounce your name for the branding is Feinbaum. But while I've listened to the show for numerous years and throughout the times here and there, you have said that the actual pronunciation of your last name is Feinbaum, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So just to clarify, Stacy, we're both Alabama fans. Let's not get in each other's bad terms. But second, do your homework, Stacy, if you're going to criticize me for how I call Paul's last name.
And we are up against a break here. I hope you'll stick around. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and Dwayne is up next. Hello, Dwayne.
What's going on, Paul Feinbaum? Let me tell you something, Paul Feinbaum, about these clowns out there, all them people in Alabama and Georgia and everybody else in Louisiana and Texas. Them fools don't know that Jimbo Fisher gonna end up in Alabama with Nick Saban again, because everybody get fired. Every coach get fired gonna end up with Nick Saban. If Tommy Reese don't work out, Jimbo in the way and jump Jimbo right there. And, you know, the money don't care. You know, he ain't worried about the money because he paid. He paid in full. You know what I'm saying? The money ain't no object. He ain't worried about no money. But look at here. Let's talk about these two cornerbacks for LSU decommit. The number one player out of Tennessee, and the number nine cornerback in the country out of Florida, decommit from LSU. Where on LSU defensive back coach? Huh? They need to get rid of him. They need to fire him. The bad house, you got to go, and that Stapler man, the defensive back coach, he got to go too. We need Corey Redmond back.
You know, Dwayne, I'll tell you what, next time I talk to Coach Kelly, I'll make sure to pass your suggestion along, okay?
Yeah. You didn't tell him nothing the other day when you talked to him. You should have asked him when he going to find Matt out. That's the first thing that came out of my mouth, Paul Feinbaum. When you going to find Matt out? Everybody calling for Matt House head down here. He got to go. You know what I'm saying? The whole defense, I'll tell you, Elijah Roberts is going to be our defensive line coach. You know what I'm saying? We might bring the whole defense from Texas A&M to LSU. You know what I'm saying? The need to. If we had that defense over there, we'd win another championship. Bye.
Thanks, Dwayne. Brad is up next in Macon, Georgia. Hey, Brad.
Well, hello there, self-proclaimed Judge Feinbaum.
Hello.
I love it. Paul, America's team with Harbaugh. What is the deal with that? When Georgia's won the last two championships, I thought Georgia would be the America's team.
Well, I think you have to understand who we're dealing with here.
I got a message for a legend. Legend, when Georgia takes Alabama in that SEC championship game, and we tear it up, I'm going to call back the Paul Feinbaum Show, and I'm going to de-legendize you. And I'm going to make a phone call to Brock Purdy, and I'm going to say, congratulations, Brock. You lost your nickname. Mr. Irrelevant belongs to somebody else now. Thanks, Paul. Have a good one, brother.
Thank you very much. Ben is in Virginia. Hello, Ben. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. First thing I wanted to say is I wanted to give you a chance to apologize to Jim Harbaugh and the University of Michigan. I don't know what you're doing, thinking that you can just call for them to suspend him for the rest of the season, but that's wrong. You got to get your facts straight. It's an ongoing investigation. Jim Harbaugh hasn't done anything wrong, and I just want to give you a chance to apologize.
Well, Ben, thank you very much for giving me that opportunity. I think the call you need to be making, though, is to Chicago, where Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, resides. He is the one who suspended Mr. Harbaugh for three games. I am simply a commentator. That's all.
Well, yeah, exactly. You're a commentator, but you don't know anything. And
well,
I think that you should
apologize. Ben,
to
I'm not looking
to
for
Rick
an
Blair
argument
too.
Because I've discussed this case with far more learned people than you, but I would be interested in understanding how you view the facts of the case.
Well, I think you should apologize to Ric Flair.
Well, I listen.
Unfortunately, I was watching Get Up this
Ric
morning.
Flair,
you said Ric Flair is just a bandwagon. You said he's a bandwagon. He used to be a Georgia fan.
Ric Flair
with
is a sad person.
You're a sad person, Paul.
I am a sad person, and you're a sad person for saying I'm a sad person. but you know what, Ben? You know what's so sad about this conversation?
What's that?
It's over. David is up next in Alabama. Hello, Dad. David.
Hey, Paul. I hope you're doing great today. Was it Mr. Feinbaum?
Mr. Feinbaum, yes, that's me.
That last caller, he sounds like he took one of too many Dusty Rhodes elbows like Ric Flair did.
I do applaud Ric Flair for finding some way to get back in the news other than either being carried out of a ring or something else that he has probably already done.
Well, I just want to thank you for being the best college football mind in the world today, and I am honored to get to call in and speak to you every time I get through.
Well, thank you. That means a great deal to all of us here, David.
I've got three questions for you, and they're all just yes or no.
Okay.
If Arkansas fires Pittman, can Malzahn be hired there?
I mean, I think he could. The question is, would Arkansas hire Malzahn? And here's why I don't think they will hire Malzahn. A number of years ago when I believe they were looking at either Pittman, I think it was Pittman, but it may have been the coach before Pittman. Malzahn's name came up, and a lot of people thought he was going to take the job, and he ended up using that to renegotiate with Auburn, and a lot of people in Arkansas were offended by that. Malzahn is from Spring Hill, which is right outside of Fayetteville. He's a very popular figure out there, coached there briefly. Many years ago with Houston Nutt, and he easily could have gone back there and I think would have been very successful, but he decided
I've
to stay
you,
at Auburn, and I frankly think he burned the bridge.
I got you. Second question is, if Milroe has three huge games in a row, can he get in serious Heisman contention?
I think realistically, no. I think it's too late. if he had the kind of game against Georgia that he had against LSU, he could be a factor. But what you have to remember is the next two games are not going to help him very much. The game this weekend is Chattanooga. Is that who they're playing?
Right.
That's irrelevant. It won't matter if he throws for 15 touchdowns. Auburn is a bigger game, but still not. You have to remember that game that day you have Marvin Harrison Jr. playing in the biggest game of the year in college football. If he had a monster game, he could possibly win the Heisman. Jaden Daniels, I think he has a very narrow shot if a couple of people get knocked out. But I think Milroe is way too much of a mountain for him to climb. We'll take a short break. We are coming back with a conversation with a young man who plays with Jalen Milroe, one of his closest friends. Terrion Arnold will join us next from the University of Alabama.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back, who has had such a critical role in Alabama's big season. First of all, Terrion, thank you. We really appreciate you coming by. And I know there's two more games left. Two more on the regular schedule, I should say. There is going to be an SEC championship game. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great about it, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show, Paul.
We are delighted. I know at this point you've probably said so much about the season, you want to look ahead and try to finish out strong, but how would you describe these first 10 games and what it has meant to you and your teammates?
These first 10 games have really been, I would say, for me and my teammates, kind of like stepping stones. Like, each game, you see different things, you have adversity, and like Coach Saban said, they'll punch you in the mouth, you have to punch them in the mouth, and it's kind of like what we live by as far as the fourth quarter program. We have to be able to stand strong for fourth quarters and even overtime if that's included. And with that being said, the adversity and the way that we felt versus Texas, it was kind of something that we really, I wouldn't say that, obviously, nobody wants to lose, but it was something that humbled us. And things that we let slide and things that we let go by, we were able to pick up on those little things. And in the USF situation, as far as just seeing how people treated us after that, you know, in this fan base and with our fans, like the motto I've been preaching to the guys, we all we got, we all we need. And that's something that we're continuing to see in the growth, and I feel like we haven't played our best football yet.
You know what's interesting about that, Terrion, because, yeah, a lot of us in the media, we get paid to say things, and we call it like we see them, but it wasn't just the media, you know it, because it was former players who were coming after the trajectory on social media, and I'm assuming, based on what you said, that infiltrated into where you guys work and hang out, and it must have affected you in a great way.
It did. Obviously, when you see guys that you grew up watching and guys that have been in your shoes before, when you watch them or you go and look at them say stuff about you, I'm one of those guys. I don't have Twitter. I mean, the thing I got is Instagram, so I didn't really see those comments. But for my teammates to bring it up to us and kind of it get in the locker room, it kind of disheartened us because, I mean, it's obviously like, man, you're supposed to be right here with us, and you guys have been in our shoes before. So if anything, you guys should be encouraging us with the adversity that we're trying to go through right now.
Terrion, was it any one comment that you heard from your teammates, or was it just a collage and a collection of shots that really really penetrated the mindset of the Crimson Tide?
Nah, I would say it was more than one. It was definitely like a bunch of different shots. And obviously, Coach Saban, he got asked about it in a couple things. And the team meeting that we had, he kind of addressed it and just said, you know, the guys that came before us, that was them, and this is now. Obviously, it's a whole different generation, a whole different era of football, and we have to stay where we're at right now.
And it's part of life. We all deal with it, anybody that's ever done anything. But those same guys who were taking the shots, they'll be slapping you on the back in a couple weeks in Atlanta, won't they?
They sure will. And, I mean, that's the beauty of this thing right here, Paul. Like, I love it because, I mean, I'm one of those guys, I never forget what anybody says. And I don't know if you're like that too, but just from seeing you on the show, you kind of seem like the guy, and you have a great memory. Like, I'm one of those guys, I don't forget at all. So, I mean, I can dap you up, smile in your face, but ultimately, when you were dissing us or saying what you were saying behind our back, it's kind of like, yeah, I remember that. I remember it.
Well, and I, it's like your position. I have a couple of friends who have played what you do on a very high level, and it's you don't let the quarterback see what you're going to do. You try to fake them out. And I think the best thing, not that we're giving each other advice here, because you know a lot about this, is just shrug your shoulders and act like you didn't even hear it.
You're right about that.
And what you guys have done has answered the critics, and I want to ask you about that. Because on the field, the play has been fantastic. You know, a lot of statistics seem to point toward the second half, especially in some of the bigger games, the LSU game, the A&M game, the Tennessee game, the Kentucky game was pretty much over from the beginning. Is there anything that happens? Is it halftime? Is it just a progression that you're wearing the other team down that the second half has been so dominating for the Tide?
I would say it kind of goes like this. When you go out there and you get a feel for your opponent, obviously they're going to throw shots at you. You're going to throw shots at them. It's kind of like playing chess. I mean, it's kind of like just about initiating the pieces and kind of seeing who's going to be dominant first. And then when you kind of feel out your opponent, you kind of know then, like, oh, man, I got him. And that's the mindset that I have even when I'm playing corner. Like, when I line up, see against my opponent, those first couple releases, you're kind of like, okay, I see what he's working with. And I'm seeing what I'm seeing on film. And you get ready to compete. And obviously, when you go into the second half and you go into the locker room, great defensive coordinator Kevin Steele, T-Rod, we got a bunch of guys who see everything on the field. So when we're able to go in there and make those adjustments, write it out, make the corrections necessary to go out there and affect the game, we do a very, very great job of that. And Coach Saban, I mean, he's the best in the game at doing that. So I would say our mentality is we start off playing chess, and then in the second half, we start off playing Monopoly. But we got to go out there and be able to play Monopoly the whole game.
I've always wondered about the guys that play on the backside because having spent a lot of time around Coach Saban early in his career, that's his position, as you know. And he takes a special pride. He even tried to teach me that position one day. And I'll tell you a quick story. We had a simulation, and the guy caught the pass over me, and I used the wrong hand
offhand swat, wrong hand swat. Exactly. I know he said it.
And I looked at him, and I didn't do anything. I wasn't about to tell him. I didn't want to say, Coach, you didn't tell me which hand to use. But he immediately knew. He said, I told you, I never told you you're supposed to use the other hand. I mean, he coached himself there. And I haven't played since, by the way. But if I ever get out there, I know what to do.
And, Coach, hey, like you just said, Coach Saban does a great job of that. Like, most people don't realize the guy's his own worst critic. Like, we'll come in the film room. Man, I'm sorry, man. I didn't prepare you guys for seeing that right there. Like, a lot of people don't understand, man, the guy takes a lot of heat, and he does a great job of just being even keeled. I can honestly say, like, you can't tell if we're winning by 30, losing by 30. Like, I mean, the guy's even keeled all over the board, and that's the way he lives his life. And I feel like that's why he has the success that he has. And that even partakes into the reason why I came to Alabama. I felt like I had to come here to learn how to win and learn how to deal with certain situations and a lot of life lessons that you get from being around him and being in the program. I mean, it benefits you in a positive way, in ways that I couldn't even believe and imagine, and I'm really great that I made a decision to come here.
Which brings me to something you said a couple weeks ago. I think it was the A&M game when you mentioned an interaction with Coach Saban's wife, Miss Terry. It got a lot of attention, and obviously everyone loves her, but would you mind telling us that story?
Miss Terry, as she does before, we've been doing it since the season started. At first, I kind of thought maybe it might have been like, okay, Coach Saban might be telling her what to tell me so I could go out there and relay it to the guys and relay it to myself. But then I started to pick up on it like, nah, this ain't Coach Saban. Like, Coach Saban, he's very nice and generous, but he ain't this generous. This got to be Miss Terry. So as far as our relationship goes, like that Texas A&M game, she said, I know you remember your freshman year when we went out there and how you felt. So just try to channel that and get the guys going. And with that being said, she does it every game. Like, I got the text from her literally today. She was saying, Chattanooga, this is a chance to go out here and continue to grow. And obviously, when you're playing games like this, you never want to get caught slipping. Just how she said, the Kentucky game, when you have success beating LSU, beating Tennessee, two teams that you lost to in the former year, you could tend to get high. I mean, that's life. Like, in life, when you have success and you start – to have more and more success, you have to stay humble and you have to try to keep that even keel mindset. So with that being said, she does a great job of getting me back to that even keel and getting the guys back to that even keel. And she's really like a mom. Like most people, they can't really see the inside of it, so they kind of think maybe like when they're being recruited by here, oh, this might be fake. They don't really act like this. And I thought that at first too. But when I came here, like, they really are like this. Like, Miss Terry is really like this. She'll give you the shirt off her back. Same thing with Coach Saban. But most people, I mean, they're kind of terrified of Coach Saban, so they won't ask. But I'm the type of person, I'm going to ask. Like, hey, Coach, I need this. I need it. Like, coach me, Coach.
Tyrion, a lot of players, after they want to play pro football, and then they think about a career maybe in broadcasting. I mentioned something right before we came on, and you really stunned me a little bit. But after sitting here talking to you for a few minutes, I have no doubt, because you are maybe the most natural athlete I've ever interviewed. I mean, you're just having fun with it. You're authentic. So tell the audience, once your playing career ends, what you would like to do.
If I'm being honest, when I get done with this, I want to act. Like, I really do. I watched, we watched The Equalizer before we played A&M. And when I'm looking at Denzel Washington, obviously he's gotten older or whatever. I'm like, dang, man, I could really do that. And then, like, one of my favorite movies is Friday. So when I watch Chris Tucker on that, I'm like, man, I could go and kill this right now. But at the same time, though, when you connect with certain guys, I watched, like, Inky Johnson when he came and, like, the way he motivated us and made us feel, I feel like I could go into that role, too. At the same time, though, kind of being like a Coach Prime, like the way he carries himself, the class he has and the confidence that he has, I feel like I got that, too. And another person I would kind of say is like a Roman Harper, kind of like same thing in your field, the way that he carries himself. I love the way he does that. And, you know, to each his own, even you, Paul, like, who's to say, like, me and you might not be doing business together in a couple years. Well, nah, I won't say a couple years because I plan to play for a long time. So.
Well, I appreciate you including the senior citizens here, Terrion. That was very nice of you. I hope so. I'll be a very old actor by the time you finish playing in the NFL.
Hey,
you
ain't nothing wrong with that.
Hey, I will be waiting for you on the corner of Rodeo Drive and Hollywood Boulevard. Hey, listen, thank you very much. Congratulations on the season, and we can't wait to catch up with you again a little bit later on.
Appreciate you guys, man.
Thank you. What a absolute joy that was to talk to Terrion Arnold, the DB from the University of Alabama. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and let's check in with Todd in Nashville. Todd?
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Well, first, thank you for taking my call. I got a question for you about Tennessee.
Sure.
Do you think there's absolute any possible way that we beat Georgia this week?
Yeah, I mean, there is a way, and Tennessee will be at home, which is so obvious, but they're a good team at home. They're an absolutely putrid team on the road, but at home they tend to play well, and they're capable of making it interesting. I'm not really sure how, but I think they are at least capable.
Speaking of that, the last time that we lost at home was Georgia in 2021 in November.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, I think you're right. One thing about Georgia, they played a couple of what have they played now? Three very big games in a row, Florida, Missouri,
yeah,
and Ole Miss. So I mean, if you want to look at that, and I mean, there's no way they're coming in looking ahead because there's nothing to look ahead to. They got Georgia Tech the week after. I think they'll take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a matter of Tennessee playing. Not a perfect game, but they just can't screw around like they did against Missouri. And, you know, from the physicality, I mean, how they figure out how they just got just beaten down offensively and in the trenches, I don't know. Ren is up next. Hey, Ren.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to call today and kind of talk about your thoughts on the Iron Bowl. I'm really not liking your opinions on it.
Well, I mean, I'll spare you all the cliches that I've heard for 40 years about the Iron Bowl, but I do think it. You know, Auburn is on a roll at the moment, and I think that's important. So I give them
a
chance.
Personally,
what's that?
Personally, Paul, I think that Auburn has one of the best secondaries in the country, and
okay.
I think that Milroe is probably the most mistake-prone quarterback in Division I football.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if you've watched him lately, but he's not quite the same quarterback he was 7 or 8 weeks ago.
Well, I was out of the country this past weekend, Paul. I get he put up 49 on Kentucky, but Auburn could do the same, buddy.
Well, you say Auburn could do the same, but tell me about all of Auburn's big wins this year. You want to go down that list? You got plenty of time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got a bunch of them, man. Massachusetts, you kidding me?
Well, I'm going to give you the game. We're going to put a schedule up in a minute, and I'm going to help the audience understand. You had a win over.
So far this year, all right, we beat Massachusetts, California, Power 5 football team, beat Sanford.
Hey, Ren, don't waste
Georgia
our time,
Bulldogs,
okay?
Paul.
We're trying to talk seriously here. Auburn, let's talk about Georgia, LSU, and Ole Miss, okay?
All I'm saying, Paul, is put down the crack pipe. Bama's not beating Georgia, Auburn by 50.
Well, unfortunately, you need to go back out of the country and get whatever you were smoking there to bring back in the country. Because you're having a hard time. Thanks for the call. Dave is in Richmond, Kentucky. Hey, Dave, good afternoon.
Yes, sir. It's hard to follow up on that guy. But anyway,
what do you think about Gus Malzahn, Gene Chizik, or Cadillac Williams taking over Mississippi State?
I think of those three, I think Gene Chizik would be an interesting choice. He's a good, you know, he's got a lot of experience as a head coach. He's been out of the game from a head coaching standpoint for some time, but he's been the coordinator, getting a lot of criticism at North Carolina, but that's, again, there's only
How about
so much
Cadillac
people.
As a recruiter?
I don't know. It's possible. I think Malzahn's got no shot, but you know, Cadillac would be an interesting choice. I mean, he's certainly a great recruiter, and he's got a little bit of experience, and I think he could handle the job.
Well, all right. Well,
thank you very much. Appreciate your call. John is in San Antonio. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. Hey, what's going on with these Arkansas Razorbacks? We just can't ever get a coach, and someone knows what's going on up there. Sam Pittman has just kind of washed out this year, hasn't he?
Yes, he has.
Yeah. How about hiring, you know, the Alumni Association at University of Arkansas got to get their stuff together and look at hiring some real good-name coach. How about Garrett, you know, used to be at the Dallas Cowboys or either their defensive coordinator at Dallas. Why wouldn't one of those guys be interested in coming out
well,
to
as, raise
as far
as
back?
Jason Garrett, he's doing TV right now. I mean, let's see, he got fired from Dallas, got fired from, wasn't he in New York too? So I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of names you can throw out. That's Hunter Yurecek's responsibility, and I trust him. He's a very competent athletic director.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.